Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino series. On this episode, we talk with novelist Terry Brown. She opens up about her novel Sunflowers Beneath Snow. It is historical fiction set in Ukraine. It's rather timely in this modern world of ours, yet it has been years in the making. It came out in January 2022 before the invasion. Ultimately, the book reveals the historical relationship between Russia and Ukraine as it explores family ties, national pride, and the resilience of women. Terry was born in Athens, Greece, as an Air Force brat, and came into this world with an imagination full of stories to tell. These days, she calls the North Carolina coast home, and is a wife, mother, grandmother, and author, relishing the peaceful nature of the sea that inspires the creativity for penning more books and adventures. We get into that and so much more. Enjoy this interview.
Thanks for agreeing to do the interview. I'm looking forward to talking with you about this, and it seems like probably one of the most timely things that are happening on planet Earth right now.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
I've had people ask me, how did you know? And it was like, no, that's not the way that works.
I guess at the end of the day, though, it sells, it's good for you, and it sheds probably much needed light on a conflict that maybe people don't have any true historical context for.
Right. They don't have the context for, and if you don't have the context and you don't know anyone, then it makes it pretty far removed, and it's hard to develop any kind of empathy for it.
And I think that's the thing that's probably key about this right now is, because we've all globally as one gone through this pandemic together and we felt this pain. And I remember early on, someone had explained to me, this is almost like getting something like cancer, where you get it, you realize it, you absorb it, you start going through treatment, and then you come out of remission. There's a lot of this that I think hopefully people have more empathy for, but it seems as though the world genuinely is united against what's going on over there.
Yes, they're united, but, you know, trying to be united and actually having a personal connection to is a different story. And the more personally connected people feel, the more likely they are to be more than just united in spirit, actually united in wanting to do something. It's easy to say, oh, yes, I believe, you know, this is terrible. And then it's a whole different thing to say it's terrible and therefore I'm going to name something you're going to do to help. Do you know what I'm saying? And I think that empathy, when you can develop a stronger empathy for people, see the people as a whole, not as a whole, but like as individuals that are more like you, then you want to do more to help.
I know locally there was a lot of reports, especially after the invasion started, where there was local people from Ukraine that had businesses and all the proceeds would go over there. And I think
right. There's
a lot of grassroots. People were buying up Airbnbs and not going. So I think
wasn't that awesome?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the thing about this, is that when people feel helpless, it's like talking to someone after they lose somebody. You just don't know the right thing to say. Maybe people don't quite understand the right thing to do. What would you recommend?
Exactly.
Somebody that's kind of detailed and chronicled this and has a real pulse on it, what would you recommend a layperson does?
I would, first of all, if you have the financial means, there are some really good organizations out there that are getting money to help specific things. So think about your own life in terms of, do you want to help soldiers? Then there are places that you can go, like the one that I'm supporting through my book is called Come Back Alive, Come Home Alive, Come Back Alive. And it provides soldiers not with weaponry, but with things like drones and technology and things that they're having trouble getting enough of. Are you into, you know, helping children? Then look for those funds that are helping children, especially the refugee children or whatnot. There are so many really good foundations. I just highly recommend that you research it and make sure that it's real and not one of these that has popped up. If something has popped up in just the last, you know, 90 days, I'd be wary of it. But if it's something that is out there and has been out there to help not just Ukraine, but other countries, and now they have a Ukraine division in order to help, that's what I would be putting my money into. Like the Catholic Charities or I think that United Way may have some things out there. I would just, like I said, I would look and be very careful. The other thing is there's a lot of people who are collecting donations to send, including, you know, hygiene kits and non-perishable items and clothing, because most of the people who are leaving Ukraine and ending up in Poland and other border countries left with nothing. Like, they left with what's on their backs. So that's another thing you can do. Another thing I would recommend is, I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but even putting out on your social media, keeping it alive. Because what happens is, you know, this has been going on now since toward the end of February. So that's, what, 3 months. It begins to get old in the news. So you hear less and less about it. It's not over, and it isn't going to be over for a long time, because even if today Russia were to pull out and it was over, it will take Ukraine years to get back what was taken from them. So even putting on social media, I have a friend who every day posts a different painting or artwork of some kind that has a sunflower on it. And she writes, "Sunflowers for Ukraine." And wonderful. When you see that on your Facebook, then it reminds you, oh, yes, that's still going on.
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot, too. You know, it seems very simple, but the collective, it's kind of like democracy. The more voices that are out there,
exactly.
Makes it that much smarter.
Exactly.
And you're the type of person that really is the right person to answer that. In 2020, beating back the pandemic blues, with your husband, you went from Astoria, Oregon to Washington, D.C. to raise money for Toys for Tots. During that time, 2020, and just in general, it seems rather extraordinary to do that.
You know, it's interesting. We had anticipated going in 2020, of course, before the pandemic. You don't just make a decision to travel across the United States on a tandem bicycle on a whim. So we had this all planned, and then we thought we weren't going to be able to go, and we actually put all of our gear away and felt extremely depressed about the fact that this huge adventure that we had planned wasn't going to happen. Then the more we talked about it, it was like, why not? We're just as likely to contract. We live near the beach, okay? And so we have a lot of people who visit the beach. And we were looking at the numbers. The numbers here in our county were worse than they were in most of the places that we would travel. And we thought, we're more likely to get it in our own grocery store. And so we said, we might as well go. What a better time. And we had people who followed us that essentially felt like they didn't have anything else to do. They felt trapped in their homes, and they were reading our story, and it became this thing that helped people get through COVID. There was one point where we had had several miserable days in a row. The wind was against us. It was very hot. It just seemed like we had more uphills than we had downhills. And I had said, I don't know, we may just have to stop. I just don't see us being able to get through this. And I had so many people reach out to me that said, you know, we would understand if you quit, but please don't. I mean, you're the thing that, like, we get together in the evening and we read your blog post and we look on the map as to where you are. We're actually living life through you right now. So
that's wonderful. I mean, that's the way I think, you know, I think that's the triumph of this pandemic, is it threw us all into a place where we had to really operate off of who we truly are. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I think anything that you were before was just going to get magnified, and you took that to another level, and that's wonderful. So my question to you is, when did this book exactly come out?
So the book came out, the actual launch date was January 25th. So there was kind of like an early pre-release in early January, but the actual release date was January 25th, so a full month before the invasion occurred.
You know, I think that's the thing about this. What kind of motivation did you originally have? How long did this take? Kind of the journey from inception, thinking of having a book of historical fiction, your debut, to actual fruition, to the release date.
Okay, so I came up with the idea in 2016, and I'll tell you about that in a moment, but that's when I came up with the idea. I wrote the bulk of the book in 2018. I finally got it to a publisher that accepted it in 2021, and then it came out in early 2022. The ride across the United States is what gave me the guts to push that book out to a publisher. I had written it, but just didn't feel, I don't know, I had a real fear of putting my work out there. I just wasn't sure that I was a good enough writer. I had spent 14 years in an emotionally abusive relationship. My current husband is a great guy, so not him. But I was in this horrible relationship where I spent all that time not believing in myself. And even though I was out of that relationship, there was a lot of leftover stuff that just made me feel like, yeah, I wrote it, but who's to say it's any good? And when I got done with this ride, it was like, if I can ride across the United States, I can do anything I set my mind to. And so it kind of gave me a different perspective on life, and I put that book out there, and then it got accepted, and then finally came out. So it was a six-year journey from the moment that I heard a little tidbit of a story until it came out. It took 6 years.
My question to you is, talk to me a little bit about how the stories came about. What were kind of parts of you and parts of what you wanted to see on the page?
All right, so the idea came to me because my daughters work at a summer camp, or did at the time, and every summer they would also bring international students to work at this summer camp. So my girls got the chance to meet people from a lot of different countries. And one of the girls was Ukrainian, and she came to the United States in 2013 and then was able to come again in 2014. But she was unable to go home because in August of 2014, Russia invaded Ukraine. All flights were stopped, and her parents lived right in the war zone area. She was never able to go home again. She's never been home. It's been 8 years. And she ended up getting a visa to stay in the United States based on, you know, being essentially a refugee that was, you know, here in the States when it all happened. Well, she moved to New York City and lives in the Brighton Beach area. And she came to visit us in 2016 and told me this incredible little sliver of a story. And I thought, oh my gosh, that can't be real. I must be misunderstanding. We must be having a communication barrier. So I kind of like repeated her story to her, and she's agreeing with me the whole time. Yes, that's what happened. Well, that story was so incredible that I felt like it needed to be written or turned into a movie or something. But I didn't feel like I was the person to do that. At the time, I was still in that emotionally abusive relationship. I certainly wasn't the writer for that. I was writing nonfiction at the time, helping small businesses, but had been told over and over that I did not have the ability to, you know, ever consider fiction. And that was my dream. Well, I left that relationship in 2017, and I met my now husband early 2018, and I was telling him this little sliver of a story. And he looked at me and he said, that needs to be written and you need to write it. And so I went on a writer's retreat and I wrote 82,000 words of fiction so that I could tell this little tiny sliver of a story. So the entire work is my own making, except for the last three pages of the last chapter, and that's real.
Wow, that's some divine inspiration. So All of this imagination was hatched. You were born in Athens, Greece, Air Force grad. You're now in North Carolina. Talk to me a little bit about, geographically speaking, and even your upbringing that got you to a point where writing and your imagination has been kind of something that you've relied on quite a bit.
You know, it's interesting. I, as a small child, I wanted to be a writer, but I also wanted to be an Olympic ice skater and a brain surgeon. And so you know how kids are. They've got all of these ideas. In early childhood, probably even through middle school and somewhat into high school, I really loved writing, and I would write poetry and short stories. And then I went off to college and just, I don't know, I never went into writing in college. I was looking for what I thought was job opportunities, or, and I didn't see writing as one of those. That's probably a little to do with my upbringing. My parents, you know, you had to do something like go into business or go into the medical field or be a lawyer or something. And so I kind of put my writing on hold. Then I have got married. I had four children. I got divorced. I got remarried. And it was, like I said, the emotionally abusive relationship. It's like all of that creative stuff kind of got put on hold and shoved to the background. But in the last few years, before I started writing again, I knew I wanted to write. I had stories in my head. I have, when I tell people this, it sounds like I need to be on medication, but I have voices in my head that talk to me, and they're characters. And they have these great stories, and I would see things happening just in the world in people's lives or hear a song and think, oh my goodness, that little piece of that song makes me think of a story that I should tell. This was going on and on and on in my mind. And I met a friend who was much younger than me, and she was going to law school and had a 2-year-old child and was trying to write a novel all at the same time. And she told me about this writer's retreat and convinced me that I wanted to go try it too. And so I went and tried this writer's retreat, and I was there for 1 week. And in that 1 week, I wrote 50,000 words of fiction. It is my first manuscript. It will probably never see the light of day because it's not that good. There's a lot of mistakes throughout. And I don't mean proofing mistakes. I mean how I went about writing my story. But it proved to me that I had that in me, that I had the ability to get that out. And just like any artist, you know, they probably would, like a painter would never show you their first painting because that's where they were learning. That's what my first several manuscripts were ways for me to learn how to create character and scene and how to move my story from one place to the next and how to create the kind of interest that would, you know, captivate an audience and want them to move from chapter to chapter with you. Finally, I got to the point where I felt like this story was one that I could write. And that's when I sat down and did it. I think I've always been creative. I just kind of put it on the back burner because life got in the way.
As it does, for sure. So, Sunflowers in the Snow, you know, what are the reviews like? I mean, how... the response, obviously, because it's so timely right now, what have been some waves of responses you've gotten from people?
Well, I've gotten, I guess, 7 editorial reviews, which have all been excellent. I mean, every one of them has just said that it is a wonderful book, so that's great. But what I love is getting the reviews from my readers, and I've gotten reviews, the ones I think that touch me the most are the ones that say things like, I knew nothing about Ukraine, and I didn't understand what was going on between Russia and Ukraine, and now I do. And another one that said, I walked away feeling like I now have friends in Ukraine, and because I have friends, what's going on there matters to me more. And those are the kinds of things that have really pumped me up, because that's kind of my goal with this book at this point, is to help people get someone there that they know. I know these characters are not real, but they could be real. It's a historical fiction. They are doing things that other Ukrainian people actually did, similar things. When you walk away, you now know someone in Ukraine. And when you know someone somewhere, the empathy that you have for their plight is only stronger. And so that's my hope, is that, you know, that's what literature can do, is it can provide us the ability to put ourselves into the shoes of someone else in a way that we wouldn't be able to otherwise. You know, none of us can experience what it's like to be in Ukraine personally, but we sure can go there through literature. And so that's what I'm hoping this will do.
So you clearly, you know, it's your debut, but you've been working on getting to this point to write. What is it that you like the best about this process? Not just actually writing, but, you know, you get to promote the book, you get to do all of these things. What about this collective life of being a writer do you enjoy the most?
Oh, my. You know, it's interesting. Before the book came out, I thought a writer's life was writing, period. And once the book came out, I recognized that that is, yes, you have to write, but there's so much more to it. I think that what I love the most is connecting with people who've read the book and finding out what did you think and why did you think it, and even what would you have done differently or what more would you have wanted to know about, because I think that those connections are what's going to make me a better writer, understanding what they see in the book, just as importantly, what they wish I had done more of.
You know, the one thing you mentioned, you know, writing tandem across the country, and you've touched on some other things over the COVID quarantine, but I'm curious, it was such a time of self-reflection for the whole planet. What did you learn about yourself over this time that maybe you didn't realize before that will make you stronger now, kind of as the world wakes up and you promote this book more and more? What is it that has made you stronger?
I think what I realized about myself is that I thrive on connections. You know, in early COVID, we all kind of hid ourselves away. We were essentially told to hide ourselves away, and so we did. But I think we hid ourselves away well beyond what we needed to. And then all of a sudden, things started opening up where we found ways to connect with one another, even if we couldn't be in the same room. I mean, you know, Zoom became, you know, the way everybody connects now. And I think the thing that I learned, like I said, is that connections really matter and that we can stay connected to people in ways that we didn't think about before, and that we need to work at staying connected. So what's made me stronger, for instance, I have grandchildren and I now Zoom with them on a regular basis, and we do art projects and things together, even though they're miles from me. Those kinds of connections and understanding that need to be together with family, with friends, is what's going to make me stronger, and I believe will make me a better writer, because I believe that strong characters are what makes the best kind of literature to read. And the only way that you can create strong characters is to have strong relationships and to understand those feelings that people have, you know, when they're going through happy times, sad times, disappointing times.
So you've clearly been on a path your whole life to get to this point, to have a novel and to be working on more material. So my question to you is this: if you have a dream tonight and you run into your younger version, and, you know, say in your 20s, and you could give that version of yourself a piece of advice based on what you've learned throughout all these years, what would it be?
It would be to believe in yourself, to not let anyone tell me anything else. You know, in my early 20s, I knew that I was a great person that was destined to do great things. And somewhere along the line, I lost that. And it took me, you know, to get into my 50s again to remember, hey, I'm a great person and I can do great things. And so, yeah, I would tell myself, don't let anyone or anything take that from you. Keep that in your mind. I saw a video of a little child who stands in front of the mirror every morning and they say things like, you know, I am smart, I am beautiful, I am great, I am. And I thought, boy, I should have been doing that all those years, because not that I necessarily would have begun writing any earlier, because I don't know that I was ready to begin writing any earlier, but I don't think I would have lost myself in the process.
So let's say we talk 5-10 years from now, and I'm like, what's going on? How's everything going? What would you like to see transpire in light of you just releasing this book this year and, you know, things that are coming up for you? What do you want to have happen?
I hope that if we talked 5 years from now, I hope that we would be talking about my sixth book that is, you know, about to be released. I'm not really looking for fame and fortune, although, you know, if that comes, I wouldn't, you know, be adverse to it. But I think what I'm looking for is to be known enough by those people, you know, to have a following, to have people who are looking forward to my next book, to be able to help other writers who are getting started and help them, you know, have, you know, like I can see me mentoring in some way. I would love for my writing, my novel writing, to be my work instead of trying to do other things too. Like right now, I'm writing my novels, but I'm still working for small businesses. And although I've enjoyed that, I would love to be able to put that part of my writing to the side and focus completely on my novel writing. So that's what I'm hoping.
Everyone has a perception of who you are, your family, your friends, your readers, your fans. But you live your life. You have a perception of who you are. Who do you think you are?
Yeah, well, I'm still figuring out who I am. I hope I continue figuring out who I am until the day I die. But who am I? I think I am a person who feels strongly and who wants to help others. Like, I am definitely a helper. That's what I want to do. I always want to give back. I think I'm also probably a lot stronger than most people realize.
Perfect. Carrie, hey, thank you for opening up. Good luck with the book, the next book. It was great to get to know you. Thanks for taking some time out today.
Thank you so much for calling me.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another famous interview with Joe DiMino, where we cover the world of art, literature, and music around the globe. If you want to hear more interviews, you can go to Famous Interviews with Joe DiMino in the iTunes Store. Visit YouTube's Neon Jazz channel, and for everything related to Joe DiMino, joedimino.com, where you can donate via PayPal or Patreon. Your support is huge and appreciated. Until next time.